This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From North, South, East, and West, North America, Japan, and back again, this is your home for modern-day wrestling. With the occasional trip back in time, it's Place to Be Nation's main event. Now let's head into Studio B with your host, Scott Criscolo, and the godfather, Nate Milton.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to your home for everything modern-day wrestling all over the world, and we'll be talking about stuff from around the world tonight. Place to Be Nation's main event. I am your co-host, Scott Criscolo. Episode 128. We can finally say it this week because two episodes ago we were wrong. We could call this the Adrian Peterson episode. However, his name is a bit sullied, so we won't use him, depending on your point of view. The funny thing is we're in like weird numbers. Once we get into like, wait till we get to like episode 32, 33, and 34. Oh my God, we're going to have guys all over the place in all sports. But we'll get there. Let me bring in my group. First off, he's got a tremendous show, The Kings of Sport. Check out all of his great stuff on Patreon. Become a Patreon sponsor for The Kings of Sport, and he'll talk about that later on in the show. The Godfather, Nate Milton.
What is going on, Brother Scotty? Episode 128. We could call this the Tailback You episode because most of the great 28s I can think of, Scott, have that in common. You know, whether you're talking about a Marshall Faulk, whether you're talking about Adrian Peterson, maybe my personal favorite 28 as a lifelong fan of the Dirty Birds, and he's probably the best human being out of all the 28s, has got to be Warrick Dunn.
Yep. Who wore that in college too, I believe. When he was a Knoll, I think he wore 28 there too. I do have one 28, that great 28 in the NFL that was not a running back. He was one of the smallest players in the history of the league and arguably probably the fastest. He's the only corner that I ever saw outrun both Eric Dickerson and Tony Dorsett. I believe he went to Texas A&M Kingsville. Hall of Fame, Washington Redskin, Darryl Green.
Yep.
So, great player there. Burned me on many occasions during my lifetime rivalry between the Redskins and the Cowboys. This gentleman probably has some 28s. I have a 28 for him. He played for the Rangers, but I'm pretty sure he may have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure this guy was 28 when he played for the Chicago Blackhawks. Mr. Steve Larmer, I believe, was 28. No. The conscience of Place to Be Nation, Steve Willey. Am I close? I'm pretty sure he was 28 with the Blackhawks.
Larmer was 28. He was basically the sidekick to Jeremy Roenick on NHL 93 for Sega Genesis.
Yep. And Roenick was 27.
So greatest nice sports games of all time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm. You know, speaking of hockey, we have to give a shout-out to the St. Louis Blues, who won the Stanley Cup.
Yes, we do.
I had told you before we went on the air that my brain works in weird ways, and I was just hanging around today. I didn't do any research for the number 28s, and I'm like, is that guy number 28? Why? Let me check. Why do I think this guy's a 28? And sure enough, he is. And so, as a tribute to the great city of St. Louis, Tommy Herr of the St. Louis Cardinals.
That's right, Tommy Herr, the only guy in Major League history to drive in 100 runs in a season and hit less than 10 homers, and that was in 1985. He hit 8 home runs and drove in 105. But think about it. When you're batting third and you got Vince Coleman and Willie McGee behind in front of you, who literally can go from first to third on a walk, simple base hits drive in 2 runs every time. And that's pretty much how they won the pennant.
Vince, Willie, Ozzie.
Yep.
Hernandez Jack Clark was on those teams.
Jack Clark was the only real power hitter on that team. Yeah. Yes, I will congratulate begrudgingly the St. Louis Blues on a Stanley Cup championship, and for the first time in quite a while, I am completely clean-shaven in recording a podcast. Last night, I drowned my sorrows in a fine Whopper from Burger King, And I was tired of getting mayo stuck in my beard. So I'm like, fuck this. The series is over. Either way. So I shaved it. So I'm actually completely clean shaven for the first time in, God, I don't know how long. Thanksgiving, maybe? I don't know. In any event, congrats to the Blues. And I mean, I don't know what Peter Winson or our man Matt Souza or anybody's going to say, but the Bruins were just flat out outplayed. Very simple. They got outskated. The Blue, instead of the Bruins taking advantage of a huge Game 6 road win on Sunday, they came out last night in the first period and looked like total garbage. And the Blues, to their credit, and congrats to Craig Berube, head coach of the Blues, on going out and putting together a hell of a game plan. And Jordan Binnington, once again, the Bruins get snake bit in the finals by a rookie. In 1990, the Bruins lost in the Stanley Cup Finals to the Edmonton Oilers. This was post-Wayne. Wayne was already on the Kings at this point. But this was Mark Messier's last Stanley Cup before going to the Rangers. And a rookie by the name of Bill Ranford, who was a rookie, stopped the Bruins cold, and the Kings got, and the Oilers swept the Bruins in four straight. And the Bruins won the President's Cup that year and had the most points. Fast forward like 6 years, Bill Ranford became a Bruin, and he couldn't stop me, and I can't skate. So that made sense. So once again, a rookie stoned the Bruins in the biggest moment. So congratulations to Jordan Binnington and Ryan O'Reilly and the Blues. They earned it. They played a hell of a game seven last night in winning the Stanley Cup. So thank you, Steve Willie. You always find a way to make me not bitch and cry. So I'm telling you, you're good at your job. Because you lost, because same thing happened to my team against you 6 years ago. But anyway, yeah, we'll think of some more 28s. It's gotta be some other 28s, on the Rockies maybe, or I don't know. I'm thinking anybody. It's gotta be some 28s. Daniel Murphy wore 20 or 28. Did he wear 28? Wait, hold on a minute. I think he wore 28 when he was with the Mets, or did he wear 20? Now I don't remember. It seems like it was 300 years ago. I got to look that up. Anyway, Nate, I'm a Charlie guy. Any NBA guys? 28 is my basketball number.
So there may be some NBA guys. I might keep that in the back pocket for the B block. But yes, you know, Steve is mentioning the world champion Blues. But who knows? We might have two consecutive champions crowned on two consecutive nights if the Raptors can pull things out tonight.
Yes, game six of that series going on this evening out in Oakland with the Raptors up 3-2 and Kevin Durant not playing again for 18 months. Boy, that makes free agency really shitty, huh?
Woo! Yeah. He's still going to get a max contract.
Yeah, no, he will. Of course, Mr. Cowboy Morissette and Mr. John D'Amato will talk about that on their next episode of This Week in Sports over on the Pop Feed. All right, guys, let's dive into some news and notes. And, of course, in the B block, gentlemen, it is our most. It's our next installment of the New Japan Classic Match Picks. Brother Nate had the shoe, and he had a couple of interesting matches that we'll chat about in the B block. All right, and we will be talking about New Japan here in the A block because obviously they had a big show this past weekend. Dominion 6-9, which of course was led by the main event of Mr. Okada. By the way, I don't know if you guys were hanging me out to dry or if you just didn't know it, but I think I've been pronouncing Okada's first name wrong, or I've been accentuating the syllables more than they should be. Somebody at work, and it's a guy, it's a good friend of mine who I've told you that it has a great podcast, wrestling podcast on YouTube, and it's other platforms. My friend Mike Valenti, who does a show called Squared Circle Cycle Babble, with him and his brother Ralph, and he said his name is Kazuchika. Is it really Kazuchika? I like Kazuchika. I think it's got some more oomph to it. You know?
I always call him Kaz.
I just call him Okada because when he goes to
WWE. I'm going to name him Kaz. I'm going to call him Kaz.
Yeah. I'm just going to call him Okada because when he eventually goes to WWE, that'll be his name.
Yeah. You're putting the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Syllable.
Gotta anyway, speak the king's Japanese. Wait, yeah. That's
yeah. the emperor's Japanese.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mr. Okada successfully defended the IWGP title. He beat Chris Jericho. Naito regained after losing it in a great match that I saw live at the G1 Supercard. Naito regained the Intercontinental title from Ibushi. I think Gorillas of Destiny kept the tag straps. Moxley won that squash. Steve, you watched Dominion. Any general thoughts?
I thought it was a little bit of a disappointment in terms of an overall show. Dominion is essentially their second biggest show of the year, and I don't think it lived up to that. But there were some, I was surprised that my second favorite match was Taichi versus Ishii, which I'm not a big Taichi fan. And Dragon Lee versus Ospreay was the other match that was
right.
My favorite. That was Ospreay won and has just put together a hell of a year. Dave Meltzer gave that 5 stars. I would say pretty close to that for me. But I actually liked the match from June 5th against Shingo, Will Ospreay, even better. But if you're going to watch the show, I would check out that match. Check out Taichi versus Ishii. Ibushi versus Naito was kind of like that match. Who did Shibata knock himself out against, that match we watched? Was that Okada?
Yes, it was Okada. That was last year's Dominion, wasn't it? Or the year before?
Yeah, I think a couple years ago.
No, that was it was Sakura Genesis. That's what it was.
Yeah, this had so many head bumps in it. And the first one seemed accidental. They were fighting for a spot on the apron, and it looked like Naito was going to give Ibushi a German suplex to the floor. And like it looked like Ibushi was going to do a backflip out of it and land on his feet. But on the way down, he hit his head on the edge of the mat.
Yeah.
And just like when the slow motion happened, you just saw his neck completely snap to the side. And I know Chris Carlton, or is a friend of Kota Ibushi's, and he was basically saying, like, stop the match. Like, we need to stop the match right now. It was, and then after that, it felt like Ibushi was out on his feet a couple times and was just taking really bad bumps. It was hard to watch. So either Ibushi's the greatest seller of all time, or he got messed up in that match. So I think someone should watch that match, but I'm having a hard time like putting a rating to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the main event was, Meltzer gave that 4.25 stars. I think that's way too high. I would say like 3 stars or somewhere around there. It was a lot of Jericho shtick, which I get because he's, what, 47 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, at 47, he's still 10 times better than, I'd say, Undertaker and Goldberg at 54. But it was, if you saw the Omega match, it was similar. Like, Jericho was just, you know, flicking off the fans and doing some cheap heat stuff. It was an okay match. Like, go ahead and watch it. It's not your typical Okada match. Let's just put it this way.
Is he stuck having to do matches like this now that some other Westerner, I can't even say kaiju, right? That's the term for Westerners?
Gaijin.
Right? Gaijin.
Yeah.
Because obviously Okada, I still think a lot of people feel that, I've heard this from a couple of people at work and on some places, that Ospreay has usurped Okada as the best wrestler in the world. I'll be honest, I've watched Will a few times, and he's good. I still don't think he's better than Okada, but I mean, I guess that's a tastes thing, I suppose.
I also don't think you've seen a lot more of the new Ospreay, where he's taken some of the stuff that we just talked about with Ibushi out.
Right.
He's not doing so much of the flippy stuff.
Mm.
So, like, if you watch this year, he would be in contention for my top few. But, yeah, I think I don't know if I would say he surpassed Okada yet.
Right.
No, to me, Okada is still like LeBron in the NBA. Like, there are others that have risen to the same level, but I don't think anybody can outright say, I'm better than Okada right now.
Mm-hmm. Did you watch the show, Nate?
Yeah, I caught most of it. It wasn't, overall, from what I saw, it wasn't as good as last year's, where we had Okada and Omega.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there were some good matches. I'm a big fan of Ishii. Like, I think he is an underrated performer. So I thought that was a good match. Ospreay and Lee was a good match. I'm with Steve, though, on Naito and Ibushi. Like, they always have great chemistry, but this was not an enjoyable match from the standpoint of somebody who actually has regard for the performer's well-being and potentially life after wrestling. I was not a fan of, you know, kind of the risk involved in the match with Bushi. And then the main event, I think it's underwhelming from the standpoint of an Okada match because we have such a high standard set for it. But it wasn't a bad match. It was, you know, it was like a B-level WWE pay-per-view main event. Like it was solid, but there was nothing that transcended and made you say, you know, 10 years from now, I'm going to go back and watch this match because I have to see it.
Yeah, it was a Chris Jericho match. It wasn't an Okada match.
Yes.
See, that's bullshit. You're on Okada's turf. If Jericho can't, you know, handle it, don't do it. Because I think that's what ruined him in Omega's first match at Wrestle Kingdom a couple years ago. The more I think about it, I was blaming JR for ruining the match for me because he made it sound like a 2000 Attitude Raw match. But now I'm thinking, is Jericho overvalued at this point? I mean, he's all over everywhere. He's going to face Hangman Page at All Out, which I think is horse shit, although I don't know if that's just to make – I do think ultimately Hangman Page will win that match, and I think he'll be the inaugural AEW champion. But I also think that they're using Jericho because he's a big-ticket guy, which, to be honest with you, beating him isn't really worth much of anything. I would rather it have been Kenny. I think Kenny and – but now Kenny's fighting Moxley. I don't know if that's supposed to be a big-ticket thing or not, but we'll talk about AEW in a minute. But I feel like – is New Japan, Nate, I don't want to say talent, but are they having a quality problem?
I wouldn't
Ring
say
of Honor,
that.
Ring of Honor has a talent problem.
Yeah.
Because their
yeah.
roster blows right now. With all due respect to one of my favorite guys ever, Jay Lethal. Ring of Honor's roster sucks right now. New Japan's roster is good, but is it quality-wise as good as it's been? You know what I'm saying?
It's not as good as it was at its peak, but it's still pretty solid. And I wouldn't say they have a quality issue. I'd say they're in the middle of a transition right now,
mm-hmm.
where you had a bunch of guys, particularly Kenny Omega, who was one of the centerpieces of this promotion, and now even though you know he's still he's around, he's not an integral part of this company anymore, and so. What do we do now? We've got to raise up some of the younger guys. We've got to bring in some newer talent from North America and from the UK, and we got to get all these pieces working together. And the linchpin is still there in Okada. Like, you got Okada, you've got Naito, you got Ibushi. Like, you've got a stacked roster in terms of talent, but it's just a matter of, you know, where do we go from, you know, the last crescendo of what they've done last year and the year before that, where I think the interest in the company reached a peak. It's kind of like when a band has, you know, two or three really great records in a row, and then the next record, they maybe it's Dave Matthews Band when they went electric. it's when they released Every Day because they were trying something different and they're like, I don't know if I like it. Like, the talent's still there. It's just something I'm not really into because they're transitioning. But then the album after Every Day was pretty good. And so I think that's where they are right now. This is the Dave Matthews Every Day phase for New Japan Wrestling.
Can I use another example? I want to blow Steve's music nerd mind if I can use another example. You're a Rush fan, of course, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's kind of like... and maybe you're a Rush fan too, Nate, don't want to leave you out, but I wasn't sure. It's kind of like, I need to find their discography so I don't blow the order of songs. Hold on. Okay.
I used to like Rush, but, one time they didn't get me a water backstage and that was it.
Yeah.
let's see. I gotta find the, here we go. Rush. All right. It's almost like Steve, like Hemisphere's Permanent Waves and Moving Pictures, three straight awesome, typical Rush albums, all three of them incredible. And then Signals came out, which had Subdivisions on it, which was very synthesized, and people were a little scratching their heads. similar to that. But I like your Dave Matthews example too, Nate.
I'll go Arcade Fire from Funeral in the Neon Bible in the Suburbs, maybe even Reflector, and then down to Everything Now, which is people are like, huh, what's that?
That's fuck, right. What the fuck did you just say? hey, it could also be like Get Your Wings, Toys in the Attic, and Rocks, Three Straight of the Greatest Rock, and then they went to Draw the Line. But that was more not really music changes. That was just more cocaine. So that's that totally different.
Totally hey, different. And if you want to go hip-hop, it's College Dropout, Late Registration, Graduation, and then we go to 808s and Heartbreaks. And everybody's like, what the hell are you doing, Kanye?
Well, if you really want to go down the gutter, you can go, Let's Get It Started, Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Them, Too Legit to Quit, and then ending up at the Funky Headhunter.
Well, what happened was Too Legit to Quit was great, and then the Falcons got butt-fucked by the Redskins in the playoffs that year, and all the talent went out the window, and nobody gave a fuck about Dion or Hammer anymore. So,
hey, Hammer is now the unofficial mayor of Oakland, so he's in a good spot now with his three championships.
That's right.
And Funky Headhunter was underrated, Steve. I'll give it that. The Pumps in a Bump was a good song.
Are any of these going to be in the 80s song tournament? I don't know.
No, but we basically have our breaks set for the entire show.
Yes.
Got Rush leading in, some Arcade Fire, some Hammer, some Dave. Hammer. We're done.
We're good. Steve, I bring the question to you. I know that it's not a talent problem in New Japan, but do you agree with Nate that there's not a quality problem?
I agree with Nate that it's a transition time. And Ospreay, after the June 5th show, he was in the main event, and so he got to do the little speech at the end and said, you know, I'm moving to Japan. And he talked about backstage that, okay, Omega's gone, the Bucks are gone, Cody's gone, although I don't think Cody was around that much. Cody was basically Jericho in terms of his appearance amounts. Kushida's gone now. So someone's got to start. And, you know, and Tanahashi's on the tail end of his, you know, kind of main event career. So people have to start stepping up and rising up. And Ospreay saying, hey, I want to try to be that guy. You have Moxley in there now, who I do think is going to be pushed fairly well. Shingo has gone up to heavyweight. I think he's going to be a couple years away, even though he's very experienced. Juice Robinson is on the way up, and he's incredibly popular with the fans, especially those that have breasts. Zack Sabre, I think, and Suzuki. Like, I always think that he can be pushed up at any time because he's a legitimate, scary badass, and he doesn't have much time left. So I think this G1 is going to be interesting. To see, we already know that Shingo and Moxley are going to be in there. I've heard that Ospreay is going to be in there, even though he's a junior, to raise him up. So you have three brand new people who have never been in it before. And I don't know. I think Jay White experiment is a little bit over. We'll see. I think this juniors tournament that they have, and I'm also biased because like the Japanese junior heavyweight style is my favorite. So, but I have heard from less biased sources that this was one of the best tournaments in recent memory. So maybe that is something they could push up a little bit higher up the card to replace kind of the dwindling heavyweights. But, you know, I do agree with you. And Scott, you said something, you alluded to something that there's, you know, after a couple of years of getting good press, well, after a couple of years, there are a lot more eyes in the product now because of expanding to the United States. So it's like, you know, kind of WWE after WCW went down and ECW went down. You know, it's kind of hot for a couple of years, but then it's like, okay, you know, there's some stuff failing here where this is the only, we're not watching WCW anymore. We're not watching ECW. It's pretty much just WWE, and maybe this isn't so good anymore.
Right. Speaking of crossover to America, of course, the other big thing, the next big thing for New Japan is going to be, of course, the G1 climax, which begins in a few weeks in July Dallas, Texas. So talk about crossing over. This is pretty impressive that New Japan is going to start their epic summer tournament, which is pretty much an extended – it's kind of like the New Japan version of the Royal Rumble, except it's a tournament – to find out who gets the certificate to get the title shot at Wrestle Kingdom. The fuck are they up to now? 14?
This is – yeah, that's beyond me.
14, 15, something like that. The one coming up in January of 2020. And for years, for at least since 2012, which was the first year that a Wrestle Kingdom title shot was on the line for the G1, and just to give you an idea who the winners have been, here's who's won, just to give you an idea of what, you know, the situation was. Here's who's won the G1 in the years since the tournament became a number one contenders, in essence. Okada won it originally in 2012, and then he lost to Tanahashi at Kingdom 7. Naito won it in 13. He lost to Okada at Wrestle Kingdom 8. Okada won it in 14. He lost to Tanahashi at Kingdom 9. So three straight certificates and three straight missed cash-ins. Make that four in a row, because Tanahashi won it in 15, and he lost to Okada at Kingdom 10. Kenny Omega won it in 16. He lost to Okada. So the first cash-in that was successful was this past year when Tanahashi defeated Kenny at Kingdom 13. So Kingdom 14 is the next one. I was right, 14. So after 6 straight failures, Tanahashi cashed in on Kenny Omega at Wrestle Kingdom. Now, we all know why, because Kenny was leaving. but then Tanahashi held it for what? A month and a half? And then he lost to Jay White, and that was pretty much a transition thing, so Okada could win it at the Garden at the G1. So, at the G1 Supercard. So, we know there was a storyline reason behind it. Now, my thing is, the G1 climax to me is always a big-time New Japan, like, it's like them hanging their balls out going, this proves that we have the best talent in the world. And they never use storylines or any of that kind of jazz. They may have a match between two guys that are feuding just to kind of juice it up, no pun intended. Like Okada and Kenny fought, I think, 2 years ago. You'll have matches within the G1 that are storyline based, but the G1 wasn't used as a storyline. And now we find out over the last few weeks that Moxley wants in the G1. Jericho now wants in the G1, which I think is a laughable joke. Of course, Kenta is back, which is great. Good for him. He wants in, but that's different because Kenta's great, and he's still in his prime. Although it'd be interesting to see, because in his defense, let me sidetrack for a minute. Let me park the car and tangent for a second. I'm actually admitting it. Kenta, as in NXT / WWE, as Hideo Itami, did not have a great run. Most of it, he was hurt, and his injuries were legit. I mean, we're not talking about like a knee injury that kept him out for a couple months. I mean, one injury kept him out, what, like fucking 13 months or something? Another one kept him out like 9 months. These injuries were not, cuts on the hand. So in his defense, he never was able to get things going because he just kept getting hurt seriously. So it'll be interesting to see if he can get back into the New Japan swing of things after his body's gone through a bit of a beating over the last like 4 years. So I'll be curious to see. Having said that, though, Kenta in the G1 is fantastic. But I'm not happy about all these guys being thrown into this G1 who are using it as a stepping stone or a time killer until AEW gets TV. And I'm... you know what? The Moxley one's not as big a deal. The Jericho one bothers me because I just don't think he belongs. I just don't think he belongs there. What do you think, Steve? Maybe I'm being a snob, but what the fuck do we need him there for? There's a ton of incredible talent in New Japan that can fill up these slots and have an amazing, like, you know, month of matches. Why the fuck do we need Chris Jericho in there just because AEW's got nothing to do except you know, Fighter Fest, Fight for the Fallen, and then we got to wait 2 months for All Out? Why are we using G1 Climax as a boredom killer? That's what it feels like to me that Jericho's doing.
I mentioned this to you on the air. I before we went on, I don't think Jericho's going to be in it. I honestly don't.
Okay.
And I don't. That tournament is so rigorous and gets people up so bad because they're doing. It's not like WWE where they're, you know, doing Raw and then maybe doing one or two house shows where they can work, you know, half ass. Like some of the New Japan kind of house shows, they can kind of work half ass. These are like their big shows. And they're sometimes wrestling these, you know, 20-minute all-out smash-em-up matches day after day. There's no way his body can keep up with it. I think it might be a challenge for Moxley, but at least he's, you know, younger and in pretty good shape. I just don't think that's going to be something that happens. I mean, he's not even doing Fighter Fest.
Right.
He's only going to be doing these few shows here and there. I've kind of, while we were talking, going through and trying to see who has been announced, I've saw that Jeff Cobb has been announced, but I can't see anything official.
Really?
Yeah, anything official about that. And that makes sense because he's a Ring of Honor.
Yes, and guy. New Japan has a thing with them. That's fine.
Yeah.
And New Japan, and Ring of Honor needs it, to be honest with you.
Yes.
They could use the pub.
Yeah, he can go too. Holy cow, these tickets for this Dallas night start, most expensive one, they're $300. So if anyone wants to, and it's, you can go to the, what's the Impact pay-per-view that's going on? Is that Slammiversary, Nate?
No, it's, is it Slammiversary? No, that was in January, wasn't it? Or was that something else?
Yeah, Slammiversary's already passed.
Okay, yeah, there's a Impact.
Lockdown? Do they still do Lockdown?
Pay-per-view in July.
No, it's some theme. That I can't remember right now, but it's some theme that they've got now. They're like, they don't do Lockdown anymore. They don't do, I think the only ones they keep to are Bound for Glory and Slammiversary.
Nope, this
everything
is
else has been like Rebellion, Revolution.
Yeah, it is Slammiversary.
It is? Okay.
Yeah, 17. So we got Homecoming was January.
Yeah.
That's right. That's what I was thinking of. Homecoming was January. I thought Slammiversary.
Yeah, they got all these new names now.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's on the same weekend as G1. So, you know, Father's Day coming up, people. If you want to get me anything.
Your kids get proficient, Steve.
Yeah. Ishii's been announced. Okada, Naito. I mentioned they have said Ospreay, not officially. Shingo, Moxley, Ishii, Cobb. I'm assuming Tanahashi and Juice will be in there. And then you have, like, your Evil Sonata. So, well, I just can't imagine, Scott, that he's going to be in there for exactly the reasons you're saying. He's just not cut out for it. And this is not a knock on him. He's 47 years old. No. Plus, his matches are more sideshows. That might be disrespectful to say. They're not that type of match that you're looking for in a G1. You'll have like your Toru Yano matches that are comedy matches, but that's it. Mm-hmm. You might have a Bullet Club match, which has a lot of interference, but they're not going to do, 10 matches with Jericho in, you know, just a month of him just swearing at the crowd and DDTing people on tables. That's just not their style.
No, it's not. No, I just think it's crazy. I mean, if you look over the last few years, I don't have it in front of me, but if you look over the last few years at the last like 3 or 4 G1 climaxes, the average match length, like average, is usually between like 13 and 18 minutes. And that's every night or every other night. We're not talking about fucking 205 live throwaways. We're talking about matches, you know, like mid-card pay-per-view length matches. Very rarely do you see in the G1 climax a match that's like less than 8 minutes. We're not talking we're not talking about Survivor Series 98. We're not talking about, you know, matches that are 3.5 minutes long. With a lot of bullshit in it. We're talking about between, you know, 13 and 18 minute matches of good quality, you know, wrestling. And I think he might be just blowing smoke up our ass. You're probably right. And of course, it's a big year for the G1 Climax because they're doing a big thing in Dallas because this is the big farewell retirement tour for one Jushin Thunder Liger. It was an honor and a privilege to see him live for the first time in my life back in April at the G1 Supercard at the Gar. I wish you guys were there. It would have been great to share that moment with you. It was amazing. To see him and two guys I've never seen live, finally see live then, Liger and Muda in the ring at the same time, I lost my shit. You know, there's always one thing I got to love about wrestling. It doesn't matter when or where. There's still a chance to mark out like a kid. And I legitimately was marking out like a kid seeing Muda and Liger in the ring together for the first time live in my life. It was just amazing. So it's a big deal this year, the G1, because, again, it's Liger probably will be in it. But Liger's still in pretty good shape. He's, what, 52, I think? Anybody want to look that up? How old's Liger? Muda is what, Nate? 55?
Yeah, because Muda's right around the same age as Sting.
Yeah, so about 55, 56.
No, Jushin Liger is 54.
Okay,
just so like he's about Taker and Goldberger. Goldberger.
All right, I'm going to get Goldberger. Welcome to Goldberg. I'm going to talk. You know what? I'm honestly going to talk about that match in a minute. I'm going to talk about. We will. I know. We said, Steve, we weren't going to get into Super Showdown, but I do want to mention that match later on in the show because I think people are just getting too out of hand about it, but maybe that I don't want to go on the Hog Mountain fan club, but I do want to mention that match in a minute. But anyway,
Muda's 56.
Okay, so but both those guys are. I mean, I saw them. I'm trying to say this as delicately as possible. I mean, I saw Muda. You know, I don't say shirtless, but I saw him. You know, in wrestling gear, and he's still in pretty fucking great shape. You know, and Liger still looks pretty good, pretty good as well. So I don't have an issue with that. And neither of them are going to win. I mean, obviously, Okada will probably be in it. Although, that's weird. What if he wins it? He has the belt and the certificate. You really can't do that, right?
I've always wanted to see that happen. I think that'd be pretty cool.
I think it'd be pretty cool, too. I mean, I'm looking forward to a big match. A big show this year, and we'll document it here, a main event over the summer, how the G1's doing, you know, and see where guys are. But no, maybe I'm just using up oxygen for no reason here about Jericho. You're probably right, Steve. He's probably just blowing smoke up our ass just for the sake of blowing smoke up our ass.
Yeah, probably a swerve to try to get some more of those $300 tickets sold.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, it's not at Jerry's house. Just to let everybody know, it's at the American Airlines Center where the Mavs and the Stars play. It's not at Jerry's house. Although I'd be pretty. I mean, if New Japan could guarantee filling that place, which they can't. Nobody can. I mean, WWE filled a shitty WrestleMania there, so I don't know who knows. All right, let me talk before I get into AEW because I have a good discussion about that. A little bit of a hypocrisy here, and I hope not to count you guys in this either because you're stand-up guys like I am. Nobody gave a fat shit about Friday's Super Showdown. It was a non-canon thing for the Saudi Arabian people, yada yada yada, or the Wakandan people for the prince and princess and you know Michael B. Jordan, whatever. The show
was, let's leave T'Challa out of this. T'Challa loves the free press.
we might have to morph that T'Challa Creed. Yeah, that's what I like, T'Challa Creed. So if nobody gives a crap about that show, why is everybody crapping their pants over this Goldberg Taker match? Everyone knew going in the match was going to be trash, and it was. But the Saudi Arabian people don't give a fuck about work rate. They're not Meltzer snobs. They don't care. As long as they get to see their heroes wrestle, it could look like utter trash. The only thing that was scary was they almost both fucking killed each other by accident. That wasn't good. Like Matt Riddle, I think, was out of line saying that Goldberg's the worst wrestler of all time. I mean, there's guys we've watched that have been fucking 10 times worse. I don't know why people were losing their minds over it when really nobody gave a shit until this happened, and now we got to suddenly talk about Goldberg taker work rate? I mean, come on, people. We got better ways to use wrestling oxygen than talk about a match I thought nobody cared about, but now somebody everybody seems to all care about. So that's my little – I didn't watch it, so – I had it on it. It was on one of our monitors at work because WWE is one of our clients. I caught some of the Corbin Rollins match, which wasn't horrible. It was all right. And I did like the faux cash in with, you know, Heyman tripping over the rope. And I liked that. I thought that was fine. Quick question, and then we'll move on to the AEW stuff. What do you think, Nate, of the Brock briefcase story so far?
I mean, I would rather Brock not be the one with the briefcase, but since we are where we are and he does have the Money in the Bank briefcase, I think they've done a good job with the story so far. I like that at first it was kind of wide open with who he would challenge. And, you know, you had Kofi and Seth on the show each week and we didn't know what was going to happen. And now it seems like Brock is kind of focused in on Seth, although there's a part of me in the back of my mind that thinks, you know, there might be a swerve and he cashes in on Kofi. But I mean, Heyman's always good. And this kind of, I mean, Brock is somebody who is not going to be on the show week in and week out. And so if you've got to come up with reasons why this guy is not around, but still want him to be involved in your storylines, I guess this is a good place to kind of slot him.
What are your thoughts, Steve?
My thoughts on Brock Lesnar is that as long as we can get more GIFs of him coming out with the briefcase play to just random songs that people put over those GIFs, I am all for it. Because that gives me so much pleasure.
Oh, Boombox so Brock.
Boombox Brock. Brock Party, so baby. Good. Isn't this the Brock everybody wanted? Everybody's pissed and moaned they were tired of you know, brooding douche Brock. Now can we have goofy, dopey Rock? And people are whining about that.
Oh, he's actually on Raw 3 weeks in a row. I would have liked more of this Brock. I said I wasn't happy that he won, and that's just because I've got Brock fatigue because I didn't do the damn thing with him the last couple years. But if this were the character we were getting and the interactions between him and Heyman, this is the stuff we would have been getting for the last two or three years, I would have been more on board with it.
Right.
And it's great because just like the Kofi storyline, this is like a little bit smaller version of that. It wasn't planned out. It was just something Brock did. And that's what, you know, part of the reason why it was so fun. It's just, hey, you know, Brock being silly and running with it. And, you know, some good fellows out there and some good ladies out there just making some beautiful, beautiful GIFs that I just, God, I've laughed so much.
Oh, it's tremendous. Of course, in 2 weeks on our next episode, it'll be after Stomping Grounds, which is the next. What happened to the good-sounding pay-per-views? These pay-per-view titles suck. What the hell happened to, you know, why they get rid of Backlash, Judgment Day, Unforgiven, No Mercy? Those titles were great. Vengeance, Armageddon, you know, those titles were awesome. Why do we have to retire all of them? Fucking short-memoried assholes in that company now.
Hold on, Scotty. We have to be accurate and factual here. Don't you mean Stomping Ground, : Kick Ass, and Take Names?
Is that really what it's called?
That's apparently the tagline they've been trying to get over this past week. Like that's everybody's promo is, I'm going to kick your ass and take your name. And like, is this what we're doing now?
This is it. Right? This is our thing. Good
this
grief.
This is the thing.
Anyway, our next episode, 129, will be after Stomping Ground, which is in Tacoma. What the fuck the last? The only wrestling moment I remember in Tacoma wasn't Tacoma where the infamous Booker T. Buff Bagwell match on Raw with Scott Hudson and Arn and the failed when Austin and Kurt Angle threw Beth Buff out the back door.
God, you
that's
guys
the last time I remember
memories.
Any. Yeah, one that's of
the
last. Yeah.
It was still one of the worst decisions in the history of wrestling because the next week Raw was in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. Yep.
You almost feel like Vince did it on purpose.
Yeah.
He probably did. Anyway. That was my only little WWE tidbit. But, oh, I'm sorry. Would you say something, Nate?
Or no, I was just reminiscing on the greatness of Buff Bagwell.
Oh, God. Yeah, really? That takes about 2 seconds. we watched the greatness of Buff Bagwell when we started watching the TNA shows. So anyway, that was my own little WWE tidbit. We'll get more into. We'll talk much more WWE on our next show because again, that'll be the week after Stomping Ground. So we'll talk about that as we get into Extreme Rules, which will be in Philly in the middle of July. So anyway, all right. It looks like it's come out that TNT is leaning towards having AEW's show on Wednesdays this fall. Now, we don't know exactly when the show is going to start. I'm assuming it's sometime in October, and it'll be after SmackDown moves to Fridays when it goes to Fox. Now, from what I've read from people and from different sites, AEW, I think, was leaning towards having their show on Tuesdays to fill the SmackDown gap, which is fine. But putting it on Wednesdays will put it in direct competition with, or I shouldn't say direct competition, with NXT, which is live at 8 o'clock. Obviously, there's a codicil to that because obviously you can watch NXT after it's over because it'll be on, you know, the network on demand or, you know, be in the archive. But what if, guys, what if WWE has to work something out where, like, Fox Sports 1 gets to premiere NXT at 8 o'clock on Wednesdays, and then it's not on the network for a few days? Then we may have something going on here. So the question I have is, I'll start with you, Steve. Let's say NXT is just on the network like it is now. Does the fact that it's on at this that it premieres the same time as AEW show really matter? And if AEW is forced to premiere on FS1 before going to the network archive in like 48 hours or whatever, like they do with Raw, does that change the game? Two-part question there.
If it's just on the network, I don't think it matters. I can't. How many people do you think really actually sit down at 8 o'clock or whatever and watch NXT live?
I can't imagine anybody.
I mean, I'm sure some people do to talk about it over Twitter, but I've never done. I mean, I haven't even finished TakeOver yet. So I don't think that's big of a deal. If it's on Fox Sports, if it's on FS1, I don't think it would be a good idea for either company to put them on at the same time. It'd be fine if it was back-to-back. It'd be kind of like the old Saturday mornings where you'd have all the syndication shows from NWA and Texas and WWF going at different times. Do you think that's going to go on Fox Sports, NXT?
Well, the only reason I'm asking is because – and chime in, Nate, whenever you'd like. The only reason I'm asking is there's got to be more to this deal with Fox than just having SmackDown Friday nights. You know, Fox Sports now has these two other outlets. And don't forget, UFC's gone now. So FS2, which is pretty much nothing but UFC, is now all – they're gone. UFC is now on ESPN. So now Fox has not one but two cable networks. Now – it's not as big a deal in the winter time because during the week, the two FSs air a shit ton of college hoops. I mean, we've watched our two teams, Steve, the Hoyas of Georgetown and the Warriors of Marquette. Come on, take a swing. I dare you. No, I'm only kidding. And the Eagles, Golden Eagles of Marquette.
The Hilltoppers. Let's take the Hilltoppers. Back to the
on, we've watched our two teams on FS1 often during the winter. So during the wintertime, from like January to March, it doesn't matter because both FSs will have a shit ton of college hoops on. But in the fall, when there's not a lot of, you know, college football is only on the weekends, Fox needs to fill those two networks. And what's stopping Fox from saying, all right, guys, thank you for giving a SmackDown on the big Fox, but we need to fill our cable networks. So why don't you take the NXT and the NXT UK? What about having NXT and NXT UK airing back-to-back at 8 and 9?
Sure.
Now, Good, Nate, your thoughts. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And then I could see that happening. Although I do think, you know, when you ask the question, you know, did they pay all that just for SmackDown? I don't think so, because I've always believed that there was kind of a under the table agreement for the XFL.
I agree 100%. Right. People think I'm crazy. I agree 100%. I've said that all along.
Because, you know, as much as I love SmackDown, I think it's, you know, the superior show to Raw most speak. Ain't no damn way SmackDown was worth that much on its own.
Raw's not that much either. But, I mean, yeah, that's there was definitely, even though the whole Alpha Entertainment is separate and everything,
they're separate companies, but I do think that was part of the agreement that, you know, we'll have a place for you for your football league. But, you know, I think if, let's say things remain status quo, I don't think it's a big deal, because most people will probably watch AEW on Wednesdays as it happens, and then go back later on in the week and watch NXT. But if there were a situation where FS1 decided to air NXT or NXT UK or any other WWE programming opposite of AEW, you could siphon off some of the fan base. But I do think, at least, you know, especially for the first couple months, you know, through the end of the year, the curiosity factor will be there with AEW. And I think they could be doing some pretty good numbers, you know, for those first couple of shows. Mm-hmm. I am surprised that, you know, they're talking about going to Wednesday, because to me, Tuesday just works because you've got an audience that is trained to watch wrestling on Tuesday nights now because of SmackDown the last couple of years. And it feels right, but I guess they don't want to get into a situation when the NBA comes back that they kind of set themselves up for having to reschedule and move things around. But I think early on, it probably won't have that much of an effect on AEW, just because people are going to want to see what's going on.
Right. Here's where AEW is probably skittish about going to Wednesdays because of this reason. The fan-made, and I'm saying this, fan-made war between WWE and AEW. It's made by the fans. It's not made by the companies. Even the whole throne smashing and all that fucking crap. That was just giggle, giggle, ha-ha, wink, wink, and then we move on. The fans are creating this, quote, war, and podcast hosts are creating this war. But if you're AEW, for now, if you apparently want to poke the WWE's bear, because creatively, the problem in WWE is on the two big shows, Raw and SmackDown. There is no problem in NXT. And if you're AEW, you don't want to go head-to-head with NXT because, frankly, your roster is not as good. Is the WWE roster, is WWE and AEW, well, right now you can't even compare because AEW's roster is still practically incomplete. So it's not like you really could say anything. But when they get a big enough roster and they start in October, you're still talking about competing with the roster that right now has Johnny and Cole and Velveteen and, you know, all these tremendous workers and, you know, Street Profit and the tag team situation, which is tremendous, and the women and Shayna. And I mean, NXT, is NXT better than WWE? Yeah, right now it is. Creatively, talent wise, you can't really say that because the company as a whole has the most talent it's ever had.
Yeah.
But AEW, as it stands right now, does not compete with NXT. It does not. So if I'm NXT, I'm like, fuck yeah, put it on Wednesdays. We'll wrestle them out of the goddamn building. On Tuesdays, at least it's a night off. Everybody can watch it and everybody can have everything and have fun. So if you're in AEW's shoes, Nate, do you want to right now go up against NXT?
No, because you're splitting your fan base. Because I think the fan that watches NXT is probably also, there's some bleed over with the fan that watches AEW.
Right.
Whereas if you got a fan that's strictly a Raw or SmackDown viewer, you might not have that natural transition between the two. I think if I were them, what I would want is to be on Tuesdays and then deal with the inconvenience of when the NBA comes back, maybe we have to go earlier or maybe we have to wait until after the game. And right. Our audience will just adjust to that.
That makes me wonder why they chose TNT and not TBS for that reason, you know. Now, they used to fit Nitro in anyway. So if you're AEW, do you really give a shit? I mean, I guess if it's every week, but what do you think, Steve?
Nate is, I think, totally right. That's why they're leaning towards Wednesday, is because of the NBA. That's what I'm looking through different wrestling observers and stuff as we're talking here. That's why they're leaning, because it's going to have the fewest preemptions overall during the year. TNT's probably has the better shows. TBS has their lineup that's already in place with, like, how it's the girl from, used to be in the Daily Show. I was going to say, Sam B. You got your, you know, your Conan and stuff like that. So I can't imagine they're going to go at the same
TBS time. TBS is a weird network now.
It's got just strange comedies.
What happened when Sanford and Son was always on? That's all that matters.
Once they stopped airing the Braves, it was over.
That's right. America's other team besides the Cowboys. Anyway, we'll talk more about these tidbits as time progresses, because we've got a lot of time to talk about, AEW. Because, by the way, Fyter Fest will be coming up the Saturday after our show. So, on our next show, we'll be reviewing Stomping Ground and previewing Fyter Fest.
So, yes, which this week they announced we'll be able to watch for free.
Yes, it'll be free on the BR Live app. So it's going to be a short show. What's it probably going to be? Probably like an in your house, I would imagine. Maybe less than 2 hours. It's probably why. I think Fight for the Fallen will be that length too. I don't think we'll see. I do think that All Out will be $50. I don't think it's any doubt, because All Out's their WrestleMania. I think Double or Nothing is their SummerSlam. I think All Out will be their WrestleMania. So I think it'll be $50. Anyway, great first segment, boys. When we return, we'll stick to New Japan, but we're going to go back in time to talk about some tremendous wrestling, both from the 90s and from a couple years ago. Brother Nate's got the shoe, and we'll be back with our newest installment of the New Japan Classic Match Picks. Brother Steve, Brother Nate, Brother Scott, to Japan we go. After the break.
Because
we have to.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
are back on Place to Be Nation, main event, episode number 128. So shout out to the great Chuck Berry for the great 28. As well, shout out to Quinn Buckner and, of course, NBA luminary, DJ Mbenga.
Luminary. By the way, Quinn Buckner wore that, I think, both at Indiana and with the Celtics.
Yes.
Yes. So, very good.
Yeah, so not the greatest collection of talent. I think Aaron Aflalo and Leandro Barbosa, like Andrew Lang. Like, you got a bunch of guys. Like, they're not great. They're not terrible. They're just guys.
Yep. Can't wait till we get into the 30s. We start dealing with some actual talented guys.
But you know what is great, Scotty?
What is great, Nate?
The Kings of Sport Patreon. You know?
Bet your ass it is.
I don't want to toot my own horn, but toot. Because this is something that myself and brother Marcus Vanderberg from Yahoo Sports, my co-host on the Kings of Sport, have brought to the people this year. And if you sign up for the Patreon, you can get access to video versions of the Kings of Sport podcast, as well as the classic audio version, as well as a plethora, a cornucopia of various shows. Whether you're into superhero stuff, we got an Avengers Endgame review up. We've got Always Forward, which is a Luke Cage podcast talking about the dearly departed Netflix show. That's up there. If you're into politics, we've got the 20 Twin, which is a show where myself and political science professor Christopher Ely discuss all of the candidates for the 2020 presidential election.
Sorry. If you went weekly, it's going to go through the election.
there's like it feels like the battle royal from the past show in Agrabah, if you will. Where 50 people in the race, and then the person that wins, you don't really have a feeling about one way or the other.
Right.
Like, okay, Joe Biden. I guess you're the champ.
Yeah.
But you can check out all those shows and so much more at the Kings of Sport Patreon. We got a bunch of different patron tiers, and check out the show, and I'm sure you'll find something you enjoy.
I have, and I am a sponsor, and I am proud to be one. So check it out, Kings of Sport.
I believe Steve Willie is as well.
Indeed.
Yes, very excited. Yes, so check it out, Patreon.
Steve Willie is the only patron that pays us in hugs, though.
That is true. My hugs are worth at least $5 a month.
You know those inflatable things that, you know, Bailey walks out to? I want a Marcus Vanderberg one. I know you're making one. Anyway. Let's chat about what's going on the Place to Be Nation feeds. We'll begin on the pop feed. The latest talk and pop, Jenny and Tim interview each other and share summer memories in a rare guestless episode. The seventh installment of Laughing Theater finds Miranda Berthold, one half of Geek and Sassy, and Andy Atherton watching Men in Black, the original. When is the International coming out? Does that come out this weekend?
Yep.
This weekend.
Yeah, it comes out, I think, tonight, the night that we're taping this right now on Thursday.
Yes. Which means, of course, that Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson are leaving the Earth version of Thorland or whatever, and they're now jumping into International. Thor and Valkyrie in suits. The Hard Traveling Fanboys kick off X-Men Month with an edition of Countdown, in which they provide their complete 11-to-1 rankings of the X-Men Cinematic Universe. Oh, God.
I listened to some of that when I was on my break at work today, and good show. But you guys, the disrespect. I'm turning into Stephen A. Smith now, Scotty.
the disrespect,
the outright egregiousness that you showed to X-Men First Class is preposterous.
Anyway, check it out. Pop goes the movie.
I want to hear Stephen A. Smith just do a show where he talks about superhero movies. Captain Marvel.
Oh, great. That'd be tremendous. I think I might want to watch that too, actually. Pop goes the movies, which is our continuing series where a couple of fine personalities talk about a movie currently out. Out right now, myself, and Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato review Rocket Man, the Elton John biopic. He watched it. He saw it opening weekend. I saw it the other on Sunday, this past Sunday.
Oh, see, so I thought that was the Raheem Ismail biopic.
If there was one, it'd be 807 stars. Hello. I wish that would be a great biopic, actually, Nate. So check it out. The NBA team is back with Gone Fishing Part 3, where Adam and Andrew stay in the East, and then in Part 4 delve into the basement of the Eastern Conference. And Sunday Groove is back, David Sunday, talking songs by Elton John and the late, great Chris Cornell. And be sure to keep an eye on our social media feeds as the reboot of the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament is starting soon again. So check that out. Over on the wrestling feed, a new wrestling war zone, JT and Chad dive into the Raw Nitro from January 15th, 1996. Making Towns with Friends number 3 features Steve Williams recounting his experiences training in Ohio Valley Wrestling. After a six-month hiatus, Steve Bennett and Peter Winston reunite to discuss their 10 favorite single-season sports teams of all time on the Adams Division podcast. In the 8th episode of Row 1, Seat 1, Ben Zanny continues his road trip diaries in an interview with Mikey Blanton to discuss Black Label Pro Wrestling. Of course, you can check out our show as well. On PlaceBeNation.com, PTBN's tribute to 1994 kicks off with a commentary on the Best Picture nominees for the 66th Academy Awards and continues with a piece on the famous or infamous, depending on your point of view, 1994 World Cup. I will never forget that because I lost a shit ton of money on that World Cup. Maybe I'll tell that story another day. So there you go. That's over on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. Check out our social media pages, our message board at bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list. And just like we did with the greatest wrestling and the greatest tag teams, we will close ballots on New Year's Eve, and that'll be our big fun. People will really have fun on main event next year with the matches because I think we'll have some good stuff there. So there you go. So check out both the Place to Be Nation pop and wrestling feeds. And I can't wait for the greatest song of the 80s bracket. I actually got a sneak peek at the brackets. Very, very interesting. Very interesting. Let's just put it this way, Mr. Milton. Where will your heart tug? Digital Underground or the Pointer Sisters? Bet you think that's easy, don't you? Anyway. And of course, Steve will go all in a Big Country by Big Country. So, anyway.
I once did the Neutron Dance in a Burger King bathroom. So,
it's tremendous. So anyway, so check out. So the greatest song of the 80s will be coming up soon. All right, gentlemen, it is time now for the newest installment of the New Japan Classic Match Picks. Brother Nate, you had the shoe. So tell us about your choices and why for this evening. Our fun and excitement.
Yes, you know, and I wanted to do something a little different with my New Japan selections this time. And I figured, you know, I had joked on one of the earlier episodes of the main event that I wanted to do a retrospective on Captain New Japan. But that's just silly. but I did want to kind of look at some of the more colorful characters in New Japan's history. And so I figured what better place to start than with a couple of Tiger Mask matches. And, you know, for those who are unfamiliar with the character, Tiger Mask is somebody who was not just a wrestler. You know, he's, I believe, Steve, you can correct me if I'm wrong, 5 guys have portrayed a version of Tiger Mask to this point.
I believe so, yes.
But Tiger Mask was not just this in-ring persona. He also had, you know, manga and anime written about him, and it became a part of the lore. And for, you know, to kind of put in perspective to our audience who might not be familiar with it, imagine Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling, but 10 times more serious, and it actually affected or translated into the actual ring. Into the actual wrestling. And that's what you have with Tiger Mask, this cartoon character who was brought to life. And so I decided to go back and pick 2 Tiger Mask matches for the good people this week. And we are going to start on January 4th, but it's not Wrestle Kingdom, Steve Willie.
It is not.
I mean, love is a battlefield, but so was this New Japan event. I'm sure that'll be in the 80s bracket as well, Scotty.
Oh, it definitely will be.
They make fun of us that the three of us are old on this Place to Be Nation, but we were once young.
Absolutely, we were.
Young heartache show. To heartache. And we will stand for Tiger Mask.
That's right. Young hearts, be free tonight. Time is on our side.
So the first match I picked was a mask versus mask match featuring Tiger Mask 3 versus Jushin Thunder Liger, the aforementioned Jushin Thunder Liger.
And what show was that from again? I want to look up the card if I could.
This is New Japan's Battlefield on January 4th of 1994.
I got it, Scott.
Oh, you do? Look at this. Brother Steve, run the card down.
Oh, man, what did I do to myself? this was I watched this on NJPW World, so I had their search system isn't the best.
It's not.
So I was able to just kind of go through the 90s and find it. So the first match was a 10-man tag team match of, you're going to love this, Scott, Kengo Kimura, Kuniaki Kobayashi, Michiyoshi Uehara, Shiro Koshinaka, and the Great Kabuki.
Oh.
Defeat El Samurai, Manabu Nakanishi, Osamu Kido, Satoshi Kojima, and Yuji Nagata. Tag team match, JJ Jack.
Stole my thunder for this, Steve. My God.
Akira Nogami and Takayuki Izuki defeated Akitoshi Saito and Masashi Aoyagi. And now here it's getting good. Here it gets so good. You don't know what's on this, Scott?
I do not.
Oh, God. Just sit down. Have a drink of Yuengling. And our next match, number 3, is Brutus Beefcake with Jimmy Hart. Defeating the Black Cat.
Oh, God!
I don't know who is behind that mask of the Black Cat. Don't at me. Super Strong Machine versus...
Andre?
No, not Tatsutoshi Goto. This match, Liger against Tiger Mask. The Hellraisers, Hawk and Power Warrior, which is Sasaki, defeated Jurassic Powers of Hercules Hernandez and Scott Norton. This is like the Drex. This match I've seen it is actually really good. Meltzer gave it 4.25. The Steiners versus Hiroshi Hase and Keiji Muto.
Yes. Match. Yeah. No, I've seen that. That's a legendary match. I've seen that match a few times. It's tremendous.
Yeah, then we got, again with Jimmy Hart, Hulk Hogan against Tatsumi Fujinami.
Oh, that's a big match, actually. That was like one of Hogan's last matches where he gave a fuck.
Riki Choshu against Fujiwara. Title match, Hashimoto against Chono, which is a pretty good match. And then, a special match between Tenryu and Inoki.
Oh, two of my favorite guys, Hashimoto and fucking Chono, just pummeling each other to death. Oh, God, what a tremendous match. So there were some gems in that pile of fucking Drex. All right, I went on Wiki and I looked up Black Cat. By the way, he's dead, so don't make fun of him, Steve. His name is Victor Mar Manuel. Was a Mexican professional wrestler, better known by his ring name Black Cat. He was best known for his work in Japan. He died of a heart attack at 51. Let's see. Yeah, in September 94, actually. He was in Japan. He was in New Japan from 81 to 94. He also worked in New Japan as a ref. In September 94, Black Cat made his return to New Japan, after often teaming with the masked Love Machine and Black Tiger. He stayed there and kept wrestling.
D'Amato's nickname.
Love Machine.
The Masked Love Machine.
The Masked Love Machine. D'Amato would never want to wear a mask if he was Love Machine. He stayed there and kept wrestling as an undercarder, but never returned to AAA. He also refereed matches. In 2001, he was involved in a serious injury. 2 years later, in 03, he retired as a ref and as a professional wrestler. He did go to – he made 3 appearances with WCW in 98. He was at the January – what's that?
I thought so.
Yeah, his first appearance was on the January 12th, 98 Nitro. He lost to Marty Jannetty. Well, that should tell you something. His second appearance was on the January 15th Thunder, where he teamed with O'Hara and Guido, but lost to the Steiners and Ray Traylor in a six-man tag.
Wow.
And then finally, on the March 28th, 98 episode of Worldwide, he lost to Chris Adams. Oh, God. And then his fourth and final appearance on the April 4th, 98 Worldwide, he lost to Booker T. So he finally lost to somebody that actually deserved a win. Chris Adams. Jesus.
I'm going to put together a comp. Black Cat in America.
Black Cat in Redwater. Oh, my God. Anyway, let's talk more about Nate's match and forget the rest of this dreck. I did like the open. Of course, it was 5 years before Owen Hart, so I don't think anybody really was thinking twice about, you know, fucking Tiger Mask jumping out of a crane.
Yeah, I saw this open, and my initial thought, Scotty, was eat your heart out, Shawn Michaels. This was Tiger Mask's boyhood dream come true, coming down on this crane.
That's interesting. It that was not on NJPW World.
Oh, really? Yeah, Steve. It's this very like it takes forever for this crane to bring Tiger Mask down to the ring, but like he is soaking up every moment of it, and the crowd, to their credit, is into it.
Yep. he's literally on one of those bucket truck cranes, and he literally jumps out of it from I don't know how many feet, 70 feet probably. And lands in like one of those, you know, rescue mattress things. And then he walks down the ramp. It's ridiculous. knowing what would happen, you know, 5 years later, they probably wouldn't have done it. And then Liger was standing on like a thing like Shawn did at WrestleMania 12, like on a, I don't know, a fucking balcony or some shit. Yeah, the opens were, it was like watching an Undertaker open. I mean, literally just those two opens took like 7 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I didn't know a lot about Tiger Mask, his 90s incarnation. I obviously know most of Tiger Mask in his early 80s feud with Dynamite Kid. In my opinion, probably the best incarnation of Tiger Mask. So I was kind of I was kind of looking forward to this match. I didn't know a ton about this third Tiger Mask, Steve. Did you?
Well, it's Koji Kanemoto, and now you're just going to have to talk because I have this entrance on in the background, and it is riotous.
It's ludicrous, right?
And the Tokyo Dome's like completely empty in that part.
Like the upper deck is empty.
Yeah, so just like he's just floating in the air in front of a bunch of empty bleachers.
It's nuts.
But yeah, this was Koji Kanemoto, Scotty, and my biggest experience with him would probably be when they used to bring the New Japan guys over to WCW, and Kanemoto had a couple matches. I remember he had one match that was really solid with Alex Wright around this time. So yeah, that was probably the biggest exposure I had to Koji Kanemoto.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, the only Tiger Mask I really knew was the original one who feuded with Dynamite Kid, you know, in the mid to early to mid 80s. Liger, sort of in his prime, I guess. I don't think he had been out of his prime just yet. I think he was still pretty hot, all over the world still.
Yeah.
He jumped onto a mattress.
I know, it's fucking crazy. It's not crazy. I can't believe they did this shit.
Yes, for the audience, you owe it to yourself to go to the YouTube clip because that's where you get the full entrance. And watch, just even if you don't want to watch the match, just watch the entrance.
I don't even think that was him. Because the guy, like, because then the Tiger Mask comes out and it doesn't even look like what he looked like when he jumped.
A dummy?
Oh, that makes it even better. So we had a stunt Tiger Mask.
A stunt Tiger Mask. Yeah. Maybe that was
the Tiger Mask. And then he jumps onto the mat, and then I guess we get Koji Kanemoto just popping up. Hey, guys, it was me.
It's like Marty Jannetty, you know, when he was Undertaker at the 94 Rumble. stunt tiger mask.
This
match was probably about, I don't know what the official time. The YouTube clip, Nate, you sent us was about 22 minutes, but that's with opens and closes. Match was probably like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It was like 14 and a half, I think it was.
Yeah, 14 and a half. And,
you know what's interesting about it to me is that in a mask, I'm sorry, but I cough again because it was just so funny.
It was crazy.
They didn't even hide the fact that it was a mattress.
That's the magic of Tiger Mask, Steve.
The fact that it was a mask versus mask match, and granted, I don't know the back history, but it didn't really start off except for Tiger Mask slapping him in the face. Like, you'd think in a mask versus mask, you just start going after each other. But it was just like, all right, let's work our rest holds for a little bit and start going on the mat. But it picked up as it went on, thankfully.
Yeah, that was like the early story of the match. You had Kanemoto, you know, trying for the more of the high flying stuff and the strikes, and Liger kind of opposite to what a lot of people think of Liger, was trying to ground him and working, you know, that mat grappling style.
Mm. I caught that too. I was expecting a lot more high flying, and instead, we were watching a little bit more of a tempoed ground and pound, which I think Liger's very good at. Obviously, Liger's known more for, you know, high flying off the ropes kind of thing. But the ground and pound, I actually was pleasantly surprised by. Liger, to me, has always been one of those kind of hybrid guys who could work any kind of style, depending on who the guy is. But, I mean, Tiger Mask is a high flyer, and he hit a couple of big moves late in the match.
That tope to the outside looked crazy.
Yeah, it did. It did.
Oh, yeah.
They definitely didn't do that for the whole match, and I think that was smart.
Yeah.
And they picked their spots there. What'd you think of that philosophy, Steve?
I kind of dug it. It was kind of a less is more type thing until the end. I'm having the playback in my head of wanting the dichotomy of the Tiger Mask jumping onto the mattress versus Tiger Mask attempting to do a headbutt from the top rope to the ramp and totally just biffing. Completely missing Liger and just thinking, man, I wish that mattress was under there at that point.
That's crazy. But I enjoyed the pacing of the match. Since it was Matt, I mean, anytime you have a Liger mask versus mask match, you kind of know what you're going to get because,
yeah,
you know, right. You're never going to see Liger. So Liger, of course, wins. Tell us about the end, Nate.
Yeah, we get, like Steve mentioned, we had Tiger Mask missing the headbutt from the top rope, and then Liger hits a pretty nice shooting star press,
mm-hmm.
which was a pleasant surprise at the end of this match. You know, like you said, they kept kind of ramping things up and not getting too crazy, and then waiting till the end to pull out the big spots. So, the match itself was a solid match. I've seen Liger have much better matches. The little bit of Kanemoto that I've seen, this was kind of par for the course. Like, he was solid, but he was never really spectacular to me. But the thing I enjoyed about this match the most was the kind of the post-match where you had a Tiger Mask unmask, and you see, like, he has the initial moment where he kind of throws the mask at Liger in frustration, and then he kind of calms down, and he's like, hey, I'm Tiger Mask. I'm the good guy. And then they had that moment of respect. I thought they did a really good job kind of making mm-hmm. it seem like a big deal.
Yeah, I enjoyed that very much.
I did, too. I did, too. What did Meltzer give that match?
Did you have it in front of you? He gave that match.
I thought you did.
Yeah, I do. 3.25.
3.25? And I think he gave the entrance 6 stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that's about right. I would say that's about right.
Yeah.
All right. So
they had a hardcore match right after, and because that was the Hawk Warrior and Power Warrior match, and Hercules Hernandez and the Ultimate Heel Move just ripped the tag right off that mattress.
I know, right? Oh, Controversy
mm-hmm.
creates cash. So anyway, it's a great match. It is on New Japan World, obviously, but it is on YouTube. Just type in Jushin Thunder Liger versus Tiger Mask 3, and I think it says Mascaras versus something like that. And the whole clip is like 22:08 or whatever, but the match itself is probably like 15 minutes. Okay. Now we fast forward, Brother Nate.
Yes, a little
tell
more
us where
recent.
We
we're only going back 2 years now. We're not going all the way back to the 90s. We're just going back 2 years to January 4th again of 2017 for Wrestle Kingdom 11 for a match between Tiger Mask W and Tiger the Dark. Now, the reason I picked this match was because I knew who was under the masks, and I had a feeling Steve knew who was under the mask, but I wanted to see if Scotty knew who was under the mask.
I spoiled it this morning before you came on.
But I'll be on. But Nate, I do not lie to you. Never will. I had no clue. I had no clue.
So we got Tiger Mask W, who is Kota Ibushi, who is making his return to the promotion, and we've got Tiger the Dark, who is ACH.
Let's put it this way. I will say this. I had no idea that the one guy was Ibushi. But I will say this. Obviously, when he took his top off, you know, he took his robe and stuff off, and I saw that he had, you know, dark arms, I knew he was a black wrestler. So I knew that it was somebody.
This guy's pretty lethal.
Yeah. He's a lethal tiger. When I saw that he had lethal arms, I said, we have a lethal tiger. I actually thought it was Cedric. So I'll admit that. I thought it was Cedric.
There was a previous match with Tiger Mask W that I was not aware of. And no joke here. It was against Red Death Mask at the King of Pro. So this was 2000. So that would have been 2016. And underneath the mask was Juice Robinson. Red Death Match. So this was two Tiger Mask W matches in history.
Actually, I think there's a third where he wrestled Okada.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I think he did that, and then after the Okada match, he just came back as regular Kota Ibushi. Because much like you, Steve, I think New Japan was like, why are we hiding this beautiful man under this mask?
Yeah, you have one of the most beautiful wrestlers in history. And I still think that this was a bit of a rib. That there was, like, they wanted to promote the show, this Tiger Mask, like, reboot of the show that was an animated series that Kevin Kelly watched.
Yeah, it was 38 episodes. Kevin Kelly, friend of the program, stated on the broadcast that he watched all 38 episodes.
Yes.
Next time he's on, we're going to have to
get some trivia. Mark that down, Steve. Next time we talk to Kevin.
Yeah, I almost thought of just putting him at, like, texting him during the day with all of us in there and, like, all right.
Yeah. First off, before we even get to the match, by the way, just to mark everyone, I won't go through the whole card because I think we've done this before, but this Wrestle Kingdom, we've already watched a match from this show previously. This was the match where Cody made his New Japan debut. He beat Juice Robinson, speaking of Juice. And this was the first match between Okada and Omega, and this time, and that was the match Okada won to retain the world title as part of the big 700-plus day run to hold on to the world title. Naito was the IC champ, just like he is now. He beat Tanahashi, and Hiroki Goto defeated Shibata to win the never open weight title. That was a big one. And Kushida was in that match as well, in that show as well. Mm-hmm. And he lost to Takahashi for the junior heavyweight title. So it's just how about this? In a harbinger of, I guess, maybe things to come in NXT, Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly wrestled for the ROH world title.
Yeah, that's a pretty good
match. Which, by the way, Adam Cole won. So, very interesting. Anyway, continue, Oh, well, I'm sorry. I had a point. Now, listen, I've watched a lot of wrestling, just like you guys have. And when I look at a wrestling mask, I go, you know, okay, that's a wrestling mask. Whether it's Tiger Mask or Liger or, you know, Cyclope or El Dandy or whatever, or, you know, Psychosis or I or Hoovy. Like, I see a mask, or Ray. Obviously, of course, well, I wouldn't forget Ray. But these masks these two guys are wearing literally looks like masks they just bought at the fucking merchandise stand. They were shiny and fluffy, and they look like something that that fell off the back of a truck. So I don't know if the show was that cheesy looking, but those masks were brutal.
Well, for those that haven't seen the masks, they look like mascot heads.
Yeah, yes. They did, exactly.
And I've never seen the show. Unlike Kevin Kelly, I haven't watched all 38 episodes. But when the guys are coming down the ramp, they are playing the anime in the background. And I guess the masks are a close approximation of the anime, Steve?
Yes, and supposedly there's some wrestler guys that show up. There's a Nagata character. There's some character called Billy the Kidman, which is just beautiful.
By the way, Elgin won the New Japan Rumble. He beat Cheeseburger.
Yeah, Okada shows up. Tanahashi shows up in the program. Togi Makai. I'm telling you, we're gonna do a recap show.
I was gonna say, the more you talk about this, the more interested I am in watching this Tiger Man's W.
And to the point of hiding Kota Ibushi's face, these masks do them no justice, because ACH and Ibushi are amazing high flyers.
Yep.
And that was always my criticism of Sin Cara in WWE, which I might have brought up in the show before. They made his mask so there were no eye holes, so he was like pretty much going through mesh. And it's like, well, no wonder he's botching all of his moves. He can't see.
Right.
So now you got ACH doing a Fosbury flop at like full speed, trying to hold on to his furry mask and be able to, like, you know, and Ibushi having to figure out how to catch him without them both killing themselves.
Yeah, I there was definitely an issue. It was kind of like when Ray used to had mask issues sometimes. He was trying to straighten it out and he can't see. And yeah, this was definitely a mistake in that aspect, trying to promote this fucking show at the expense of two really good wrestlers. That was my problem.
How'd you feel about Miss X, though?
Does it make it enough for me to watch the show? Is that why Kevin Kelly watched all 38 episodes?
Kevin Kelly was hilarious on commentary.
He really was.
Just talking about this show and bringing gravitas to Tiger Mask W. And they had the girl from the show that was ringside. The commentary is half of the fun of this match for me.
Yeah, he was teasing Carino, like, Carino, what do you think of Miss X? And he was about to say something, and he's like, wait a second, I'm a married man. I don't look at other women.
And I think that, like, there's a point where Carino almost calls Tiger the Dark ACH.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, that was a great move there by hey.
And I wasn't sure if he was being serious or if he was joking, because when Ibushi did the Golden Star Moonsault, he's like, wait a second.
And the fact that they're calling this match, which is it's a solid match, you know, despite the impediment of the masks, but they're working in the storyline of the cartoon. Like, Kevin Kelly's like, what about the Nefarious Wrestling World Order, whatever the name of the group is on the show? And Carino's like, well, I don't know. Ghetto and Jado aren't part of the Wrestling World Order.
It's the Global Wrestling Monopolies.
The Global Wrestling Monopoly, which is...
I wonder if this has subtitles.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm sure Kevin's got an English dub.
Yeah,
yeah, you would think so, right? It's not Voltron, but, you know, what is, really?
Well, I think with his knowledge, he pretty much made the wiki page for it.
That's like explaining what's better, Voltron or Robotech. You know what I'm saying? Which I have both on my shelf, by the way.
Say, I was always a Star Blazers fan myself.
Well, I got all three. Actually, you know what's funny? I got to thank you guys for this, because watching all this great Japanese wrestling has had me expand my horizons. I actually have the complete series of the Japanese half of Beast King Go Lion, which was the Japanese equivalent, or the Japanese show that created Voltron Lion Force. So I haven't watched it yet, but I heard it's pretty bloody. This match could have been bloody if they had masks that fit, but well, we're looking that up, Nate. Tell us the climax.
Yes. We have there are a couple of neat little spots here and there. Like Steve mentioned, Bushi hit the moonsault to the outside. You had the Fosbury flop that ACH got great height on, but didn't connect at all.
Right.
With the Bushi. And then it ends up with a sequence where Bushi hits a German suplex, and then that leads to like a super tiger power bomb, like a last ride almost. A sit out last ride, I guess you could say, Steve.
Yeah, it was like he was going for the tiger power bomb, but made it into a last ride.
Yeah. And then he got the win. Much to the dismay of the global wrestling monopoly.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
That's what they should have had. They should have had like some representative just kind of shaking his fist in the corner. we'll get you next time, Tiger Mask W.
And Miss X is like,
yeah. So this match was not bad for me.
This was the opener for Wrestle Kingdom, and it, given the participants, like obviously they could have had a better match, but
right
with the kind of hindrance of the masks and this being kind of, I wouldn't go as far as to say a comedy, but it certainly was like a novelty match to promote this anime. I thought they did about as good as they could.
Yeah, and it was essentially a pre-show match. I mean, it was like the pre-show battle royals that they do. It wasn't meant to be part of the main card. So that would have been interesting if they were able to go like 5 minutes longer to see if there was some sort of comedy that happened with the masks.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the match was fine. I don't know the show, so I couldn't follow that. But the next match on the card after them was Roppongi Vice and the Bucks for the junior heavyweight tag titles. That was the match right after, which, by the way, Beretta and Rocky Romero actually beat Matt and Nick. So good match, good choices, Nate. I like to get outside the box, particularly when we try to call out Kevin Kelly's knowledge of anime programming. If he started quoting Sailor Moon, he was never coming on the show again.
That's a podcast idea right there. Somebody needs to pitch this to the Place to Be Nation powers that be. A review series on Tiger Mask W featuring Kevin Kelly. Every single episode with commentary by Kevin Kelly.
Oh my god. And Steve Carino. Anyway, we don't know if he's back on the air or ever again. All right. Guys, a tremendous show. By the way, before we go, Steve, guess what? You have the shoe. So, 2 episodes from now, episode 130, you will give us your next New Japan Classic match pick. So the ball's in your court. Looking forward to the choices.
Excellent.
That will be that's it for this week's episode of Main Event. Gentlemen, a pleasure as always. Check out, of course, the Kings of Sport on Patreon. When's the next episode coming up, Brother Nate?
Whenever the NBA Finals ends. So we're holding off, whether it be recording tomorrow night or recording Monday night. Whenever the series is over, that's when the next episode will drop.
Ah, I see. Yeah, of course. Game 6 going on right now in Oakland. So check out all the stuff on the Kings of Sport Patreon and think about kicking a little bit their way. They do a lot of great stuff. They've earned it. Of course, check out all of the tremendous shows we just mentioned on the PTBM Pop and Wrestling feeds. In 2 weeks, on our next episode, 129, we will recap Stomping Ground, kicking names and taking ass, I think, right? Something like that. The next WWE pay-per-view from Tacoma. And then we will preview Fyter Fest, which will be that following Saturday down in in Jacksonville? Where the fuck is it again? I don't know. It's somewhere. Somewhere down in Florida. So kind of a big secondary show for AEW. And then we will then go back to the Asylum and we'll compare whether Fyter Fest was as good, whether we think Fyter Fest is as good as TNA pay-per-view number 16.
Answer, no.
I don't know. Do you think Cody would sign Brian Lawler?
No, just his girlfriend.
Just his girlfriend, exactly. All right. Well, for Brother Steven, for Brother Nate, I'm Brother Scott. You've been in the main event. Have a good 2 weeks. And Kevin Kelly, we're waiting for you. Fuzzy mask and all. Have a good 2 weeks.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Hey, Nate Milton. What's up?
I don't know. I had something here. I was going to go with the tiger thing, but then I couldn't see. My mask was a little fuzzy. So, I'll just say, hey, it's good to be talking to you, Steve.
It is, too. Your joke was a Fosbury flop.
Shaniqua, how you doing, baby? This Brian. Hey, Pumps and the Bumps, too. Bus will pick you up on High Street at Brookdale Park. Give me the girls with the pumps and a bump. Bumps and a bump. Now, many say I'll be rough, but if they hurt, you know that it's a fall truck. It's making the bass go crazy in the 9-3. Shaped like an hourglass, high in this YG. So when I think I got a step, it's a fly thing. Never been a coward, because it's an east side thing. Kiana, hey, the bus will be on High Street at Brookdale Park at 1. The pumps and a bump.